Ladies and gentlemen, it is a cold February day, and tomorrow is going to be worse. It's like 15 below tomorrow. Oh my gosh. Thank you for coming. I'm so glad to see you here. This is the Sunday Assembly Madison. We are a secular congregation. We have a great motto. It's live better, help often, and wonder more. And our main point and purpose is to provide a place of community and fellowship for secular people who are otherwise, they used to use the word unchurched. But we're building a community here for the rest of us. Well, our subject today is the influence of money and politics. And to talk to us about that, we're very fortunate to have Matt Rothschild. Mr. Rothschild is executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, whose mission is to get money out of politics. He was editor and publisher of the Progressive magazine for most of his 32 years there. He's an author. He has written a book called You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression, and was editor to Democracy in Print, the best of the progressive from 1909 to 2009. Mr. Rothschild has written numerous opinion pieces. His work has appeared in the Chicago Tribune, the LA Times, the Miami Herald, as well as many others. His appearances include Nightline, National Public Radio, C-SPAN, and actually the O'Reilly Factor, which he's described as being an act of masochism. Here in Madison, you can catch Matt on 92.1 The Mic, Madison's progressive talk radio station, and in the Week in Review show with Joy Carden on WPR, Wisconsin Public Radio. He lives in the town of Dunn with his wife, Jean. So please join me in welcoming Matt Rothschild.
Thanks for that nice introduction. And I want to also thank Naomi for inviting me. I actually didn't know about this congregation and this gathering, and I, as a longtime atheist, am happy to hear about it and happy to be with you today. It's also an honor to be in any church that's named after James Reeb, who was a civil rights activist and is immortalized in the movie Selma, which by all rights ought to get an Oscar tonight. James Reeb was killed by a mob in Selma when he went down there following the call of Martin Luther King to help out in the protests, in the marches. He was killed by racists who were never convicted, even though there were plenty of witnesses. So I'm kind of the son of civil rights activists in a small way in the North Shore of Chicago. My mom and my dad were active in the fair housing movement there. And so this has a special resonance for me. I want to talk about where we are with campaign finance reform, or lack of that, how we got here, where we're going, and what we need to do to turn things around. Where we are is quite simple. We're going downhill. Campaigns are more expensive than they've ever been. The campaign in 2014 for federal offices in Congress were the most expensive ever. Almost $4 billion were spent on the midterm elections around the country. Here in Wisconsin, spending by outside groups went up almost 80% in legislative races in the race for the Attorney General. And spending for the governor's race was up more than 100%, more than double what it was 4 years ago. Nationally, a smaller and smaller percentage of the 1% is giving a larger and larger amount. The average donation to outside groups nationally was $8,000 in this last election, which is up more than 400% since 2010. And now we have the Koch brothers pledging to give them and their billionaire buddies $889 million in the election to come in 2016. So that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money that you and I and the average citizen who makes $54,000 a year can barely contemplate. I mean, if you make $54,000 a year, you're not going to be giving $8,000 of that $54,000 in campaign contributions, are you? So it's a real problem. How did we get here? We got here in part from a series of Supreme Court cases that date all the way back actually to the 19th century, Supreme Court cases that stipulated that corporations were persons, which doesn't make any common sense and doesn't make any moral sense and doesn't really make any political sense either. But that's the underpinning. And then the most recent Supreme Court decision that reaffirmed all that was the Citizens United case, most infamously in January of 2010. We just passed the fifth anniversary of it. And this decision I'm going to go into in a little bit of detail because it's such a crazy decision. It's such a corrosive decision. It was a 5-4 decision by the majority, Justice Anthony Kennedy writing the majority opinion, Justice John Paul Stevens writing a fantastic minority dissent. My dad used to work with Justice John Paul Stevens in Chicago as a lawyer in the law firm Rothschild, Stevens, and Barry. So I knew Justice Stevens. He's still alive, when my dad was alive, and he was an incredible person, really. He's a Republican. He was put on the bench by Gerald Ford, but he became the most liberal person on the Supreme Court until Justice Bader Ginsburg. So this Citizens United case rests on five fallacies. I'm going to run them down real quick. It's not that I'm a lawyer. My dad was a lawyer. My grandfather was a lawyer. My three older brothers were a lawyer. I escaped that fate, but I think like a lawyer sometimes, maybe. Anyway, five fallacies. Fallacy number one, corporate political speech, the majority said, should be as protected as individual political speech. Here's Justice Anthony Kennedy. Political speech of corporations or other associations cannot be treated differently under the First Amendment simply because such associations aren't natural persons. So this gets to the corporations are persons problem. And Justice John Paul Stevens debunked this. Here is what he said. In the context of election to public office, the distinction between corporate and human speakers is significant. Although they make enormous contributions to our society, this is the Republican in him talking, corporations aren't actually members of it. They can't vote or run for office. And because they may be managed and controlled by non-residents, their interests may be in conflict in fundamental respects with the interests of eligible voters. Our lawmakers, he said, have a compelling constitutional basis, if not also a democratic duty, to make measures designed to guard against the potentially deleterious effects of corporate spending in local and national races. And this is an interesting part of his dissent. He invoked our founders, which the conservative justices love to invoke the founders if they want to make a conservative ruling. Here, Stevens invokes the founders to make a liberal distinction and an important one. Unlike my colleagues on the majority side, he said, the founders had little trouble distinguishing corporations from human beings. And when the founders constitutionalized the right to free speech in the First Amendment, it was the free speech of individual Americans they had in mind. And then he said, Thomas Jefferson famously fretted that corporations would subvert the republic. And then Stevens, in a footnote, provided the quotation from Jefferson. This is Jefferson talking in 1816. I hope we shall crush in its birth the aristocracy of our moneyed corporations. Well, obviously, we haven't crushed in its birth the aristocracy of our moneyed corporations. Our moneyed corporations are in full adulthood now, and they're ruling the roost. So that was fallacy number one. Fallacy number two, political speech by corporations cannot be restricted. Here's Justice Kennedy again, writing for the majority. Political speech must prevail against laws that would suppress it, whether by design or inadvertence. And by that he means the political speech, not just of human beings, but of corporations and associations. And the sweeping nature of this statement, political speech must prevail, would suggest, and Justice Clarence Thomas echoes this suggestion, that there should be no restriction whatsoever on any amount that any individual can give to any person running for office. Because if money is speech, then you should, and political speech must prevail, then what's to say the government can tell you you can't go give Scott Walker a check for $100 million if you wanted to. So they didn't quite go that far. They said if there's a quid pro quo, if you're bribing someone, you can't do it. But the logic of the decision suggests that you can do it. The third and fourth fallacies, I'm going to read real quick because they are the two most naive statements ever written in a Supreme Court majority decision. Fallacy number three, independent expenditures, including those made by corporations, do not give rise to corruption or the appearance of corruption. Fallacy number four, the appearance of influence or access, furthermore, will not cause the electorate to lose faith in our democracy. Those are direct quotes from the majority opinion in Citizens United, and you want to ask yourself, what planet do these guys live on? Because it's just common sense. If you have the Koch brothers giving almost $1 billion to elect candidates that they like, you've got to believe that those candidates, when they're in office, are going to dance to the tune of the Koch brothers. I mean, that's just common knowledge. And anyone who heard the bogus phony phone call that Scott Walker got by the guy who was pretending to be a Koch brother, you saw how an elected official dances to the tune of his big donors. And then the American public has already lost faith in our democracy, largely. I mean, 80% in poll after poll of the American people, 80% say corporations have way too much influence over not only the economy, but over our political system. So it's just a joke to say there isn't corruption or the appearance of corruption, or that either of those two things don't corrode our belief in our democracy here. To bring it a little closer to home, we have Diane Hendricks of ABC Supply in Beloit, who gave the Republican Party of Wisconsin $1 million last fall. And she is famously portrayed in the documentary There Goes Janesville as hugging Scott Walker and whispering in his ear, when are you going to make Wisconsin a right-to-work state? And Scott Walker responded right there on film, we're going to do it, but first we're going to divide and conquer. Well, here we are, and if you don't think that $1 million had anything to do with where we are, I think that's also naive. And it's a real, real problem for our democracy. So, fallacy number five, no sufficient governmental interest justifies limits on the political speech of nonprofit or for-profit corporations. Another blanket, sweeping statement, which is really hard to understand. I mean, isn't protecting democracy, isn't the integrity of our elections and our democracy itself sufficient governmental interests? They seem to, the majority in Citizens United, seem to think the rights of these artificial persons trump everything else, including the health of our democracy. Here's Justice John Paul Stevens again rebutting. A democracy cannot function effectively when its constituent members believe laws are being bought and sold. Starting today, January 2010, corporations with large war chests to deploy on electioneering may find democratically elected bodies becoming much more attuned to their interests. The court's decision, he added, undermines the integrity of our democratic institutions and will undoubtedly cripple the ability of ordinary citizens, Congress, and the states to adopt even limited measures to protect against corporate domination. Well, that's where we are today. Corporate domination of our democracy. And the idea that we have one person, one vote, while formally true when we wander into the voting booth, is certainly not true in reality, because your vote doesn't count as much as the Koch brothers' vote. When the Koch brothers give, and their billionaire buddies, almost $900 million, when they call or go to Washington and knock on an elected official's door whom they gave money to, you can bet that elected official is going to welcome them in and have them sit down and talk to them as long as they want. Whereas if you go knock on the door, you're not going to be let in. And that's just basic. That's just the way influence peddling works. And it's a tragedy what's happened to our democracy with this phony notion that corporations are persons. I mean, these Supreme Court decisions are eating our democracy. And as someone who respects Bernie Sanders a lot, I hear Bernie Sanders talking about how we're no longer a democracy, how we're a plutocracy. We're a government run by money. Or as someone who likes to listen to Elizabeth Warren talk, I mean, she talks about the system being rigged. This is how the system gets rigged, right here, with the way money contaminates our political system. So what do we do about it? Well, there are a few things we can do. One, we can hope and study the actuarial tables of the people on the Supreme Court and hope that the composition of the Supreme Court changes in a favorable way. I don't think that's the best approach. It certainly isn't a fundamental approach. We have a fundamental problem. Fundamental problems require fundamental solutions. The fundamental solution is to amend the U.S. Constitution and say that corporations aren't persons and money isn't speech, and we as citizens, through our elected officials, can say how elections can be regulated. I mean, that is a central element of grabbing our democracy back from the people who and corporations who have stolen our democracy from us. We must amend the Constitution of the United States. It's a long process. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but it can happen. And actually, in 16 or 17 states, the state people in those states have gone on record saying they want to amend the Constitution that way. Excuse me. In 54 villages, towns, cities, and counties right here in Wisconsin, the people have voted, or their representatives, by overwhelming margins to say that they want to amend, that we want to amend the Constitution and say that corporations aren't persons and money isn't speech. And this isn't just in liberal places like Madison. And this is in Douglas County to Delavan, Eau Claire County to the city of Waukesha. People have voted literally 60%, 65%, 70%, 75%, 80%. Democrats, Republicans, independents alike, to amend the Constitution. And there is a bill pending up at the Capitol about this that Lisa Subek introduced, as Chris Taylor had introduced last year, to give the voters of Wisconsin a chance in 2016 to vote on a referendum that would be advisory, but it would give us the chance to say yes or no. Do we want to amend the Constitution? Do we want to say corporations aren't persons and money isn't speech? So there is that kind of activity going on. And all across the country it's going on. So that's one of the exciting things I see happening out there. And you can go to movetoamend.org. That's a great group that's been doing a lot of work on this. Also, Public Citizen has been doing that. You can go to citizen.org. People for the American Way has been working on this. There are a lot of good groups working on this. Actually, there are a lot of good groups here in Wisconsin, good pro-democracy nonprofit groups working on this issue and other democracy issues in a coalition called Our Democracy 2020. We're trying to get together. We're all working together, much more so than I ever thought when I was over at the Progressive, because I wasn't involved day to day with nonprofit pro-democracy groups. I was trying to edit that magazine. But lo and behold, it's not just a paper coalition. People are actually working from various groups together. We're meeting regularly and we're doing real good work. So that's exciting too. People aren't just in their own silos, worried about their own little job titles and their own little grant proposals. We're beyond that now. We need to be beyond that now. So there are other things that can happen too. There's something happened in New York City where small donors, if you give up to $175, the city of New York will then match, not only match that, but match six times that. So your donation will be multiplied six times. Say you gave $100, then you'd get $600 more toward that candidate that you gave $100 to. So that the small donor, the non-rich donor, can have some say. The limit of contributions to candidates, I don't know what it is in New York federally, I think it's $2,700. So if you gave $100, you're getting $600 versus the person giving $2,000, for instance. So it's not so lopsided as the $2,000 is to the $100. This, an ordinance quite similar to this is on the ballot on Tuesday in Chicago. So this is a creative way to try to at least, not exactly level the playing field, but make the playing field less perpendicular, less tilted. So another solution is public financing. Full public financing, voluntary public financing, but you could do a system where if you got a certain number of signatures, say you got 1% of the signatures that leading party candidate got in the last election. So Walker versus Burke, well, there were about, 2.5 million votes. So if you got 25,000 signatures, you could get full public financing at the level of the last election that a major party candidate got. I mean, that's a lot of signatures. It's not an insurmountable number. That's one way we could go about it, and I think it's an important way to think about. Another way is thinking about where all the money goes in these campaigns, why these super rich corporations and individuals are giving money, where those expenditures go. Well, they go to You know where they go to. They go to buy commercials on TV. These awful gutter, I think Obama called them, dragging us into the gutter, these kinds of commercials. And the airwaves are public. We own the air. The media is borrowing those airwaves from us, the American people. And we can, as the government, through our representatives, we should be able to say to ABC and CBS and NBC and all the networks, and all the cable stations for that matter, you're using our airwaves, you're using our property to bring your signals into people's homes. Guess what? During the election, you got to give from 6 o'clock to 10 o'clock free airtime to all candidates who pass a certain threshold. That would be one way also to solve this problem. And we're not the only democracy ever to face this question of how to deal with corrupt money influence in politics. And we could look to other countries as well and to see how they do that. And I got to study that. I haven't studied it yet, but it's something I want to do in this next week or two. And just, you know, take a look. What does England do? What does Canada do? You know, what does France do? What does Sweden do? It's not like those places are dictatorships. Someone solved this problem ahead of us. There's no reason we need to fall behind. So we got to do something. That's the basic point. Our democracy is decaying and collapsing right here before our eyes. And I'm reminded I have the sign on my wall at work. I've got a picture of Fighting Bob La Follette and Bel Case La Follette. And in between that picture is this famous quote by Fighting Bob La Follette that says, "The cure for the ills of democracy is more democracy." And that's what we need. We need more democracy now. We need it now in the United States. And we really need it now right here in Wisconsin. Thank you.
Announcements. Announcements for the upcoming month. On the back of your programs, you'll find out what we're going to be up to in the next month. On February the 25th and March the 4th, we'll have our atheist support groups at the Madison Central Library. This is an event you can come to just get it off your chest, to talk about the problems you're having with maybe family, maybe rejection by friends, awkwardness of being present at functions like funerals or weddings.
Lingering fear of hellfire.
If you have that angst and you want to get rid of it, you can purge here. Naomi and I have been alternating hosting these sessions, and they're really good. They're very positive. I encourage you to come. On the next Sunday assembly, we will not be here. On the next Sunday assembly, it's on March 15th. Is it March 15th? Not that far away. We are going to be the Sunday event at the Free Thought Festival.
Yay!
Yay, us! Big stuff! The topic is going to be human evolution and altruism. How those monkeys survived by banding together and throwing rocks at the leopards. Or something like that, something like that. And that's going to be at 11 o'clock, from 11 o'clock to 1 at the university, the UW campus. You know, I'm not seeing the address right here.
Varsity Hall Union South.
Varsity Hall Union South, 1308 West Dalton Street. And you can go to the website or go to the freethoughtfest.org. Site?
Dayton
Street. What did I say? Something else. But Dayton Street. We're going to have trivia night March 25th at the Brass Ring. Our last trivia night was a huge success. We were number one at halftime. Number one at halftime, and then, well, it's kind of. But we were doing very well. And we're instituting a new activity, a book club. And this will be something that you will help organize. Please contact us through email if you're interested in being in the book club. The topic that we're going to try to do first is a book by Dale McGowan called Parenting Beyond Belief. So if you have little ones in the house, you can get the book and come and talk about it. And I don't, will you be leading it?
Yeah.
Naomi, you'll be leading that.
I want to read the book. I just want to know if other people
want to read the book. And that could be a great topic for some of you. For the rest of us, like me, who are empty nesters and the children are out of the house, we could read the complete collected works of Marcus Aurelius or something like that. Make suggestions about what you'd like to come and attend for the book club segment, because certainly there's enough room that we can have more than one of those. And that's about it for the announcement segment. And now we've reached the point for thoughts, for reflections. This segment does not always have to be the MC. Up until now, it has been. If you know in advance that we're covering a topic that you know something about or has some strong opinions about, you can prepare a presentation about it, please let us know and we can include you in the thoughts section. But now, it's my turn to give thoughts. Uh-oh. And I'm going to put the microphone down, and hopefully you can all hear me, and I'm a bit of a loud mouth, and talk about our topic today. Boy, divide and conquer, that really strikes me. American democracy is in some trouble. We're in a real mess, and something has to be done. Well, I'm going to do something about it, and I'm going to do something about it right now, because I'm a guy with connections. And I'm a mover and a doer. And I've used my connections to contact a very influential and powerful guy. And all he has to do is call me on the phone. You know, these people, they have busy schedules. So we'll just wait around for a second until he calls. Do you have a joke, sir?
I do.
You do? What is your joke? Well, we don't have to do that. I got the call. So, let me bring it up. As you can see, hello? Hello, sir. Oh, thank you. Thank you for agreeing to this interview, Batman. It's so fine. Wait. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Mr. Wayne, I know this association between you and the bat is just a bunch of urban legends. That you're not connected in any way. You're not connected at all. But please don't hang up. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Oh, I'm a reporter with the Daily Planet, sir, here in town. You may have heard of it. Yes. That's the paper. Yes, the paper. Clark? Yes, I know Clark. We work on the same floor. My cubicle's a little bit down the aisle from his. No, we don't talk very much. Sometimes we meet at the coffee machine. He's a little stiff, a little formal, seems to be kind of a square, very shy around women. It's almost as though the man has a secret. You know, I don't think he really needs those glasses. Oh, okay, down to business, Mr. Wayne. I've called you because American democracy is in trouble. On top of the usual problems we have with lobbyists, Citizens United has allowed unlimited black money to pour into the system, and it's very corrosive and corrupting. Democracy has been warped and twisted and distorted, and we almost live in a plutocracy now. And I was wondering, I arranged this phone interview so that you could tell us what you're going to do about it. What do you mean you never thought of it, sir? You're an A-list billionaire. What, you could use your money to improve the system, get rid of some corruption. You're at the tippy top of the 1% of the 1%. You could help set things right. You never thought of that. Oh, well. Well, what can you do? Well, you could ask some of your friends for advice. Charles and David, for example. Do you know them? No, not the boxed fruit delivery people. The other guy. Yes, those guys. You would like to help and do some good. Well, that's very noble. Where would you like to start, sir? Gerrymandering? Gerrymandering, that's a good idea. Congressional districts are mostly totally safe for whoever's elected. If you help elect some people to their districts, you may never have to help them get elected again. They'll just ride on in. I know that districts now look like a spider fighting an octopus, but that's what gerrymandering is all about. You could even buy a little shadow party inside the party of your choice, and then you could hold the collar and wag that dog. But wait a minute. If you got rid of gerrymandering, then you wouldn't be able to do that anymore, and you couldn't do that much good. So is that out? That's out. Okay, gerrymandering's out. Well, what else? What else would you like to affect? Super PACs? Great! Getting rid of super PACs would be wonderful. Just thinking out loud again, though, if you had your own and you got all your buddies to chip in, just think of how much good you could do yourself. So, do you still want to get rid of super PACs? No? Well, okay. Well, what other ideas do you have? Raise the inheritance tax. Well, that might be good. Make all Social Security, make all income taxable by Social Security. Get rid of that limit, that cap. Reinstitute the Glass-Steagall Act. Well, that's possible. Regulate derivatives, Wall Street, and hedge funds. There's an idea. Impose a 0.3% tax on all bond and stock trades to eliminate speculation by sub-second program traders and restore sanity to the markets. Oh, that's something. But wait a minute. I'm thinking just out loud again. You benefit from all these things in Wayne Industries, don't you? You do. So if you put all that into place, well, you'd still be rich. You'd still be very rich, but you wouldn't be as rich, and you wouldn't be able to do as much good. You know, I never thought of that. What's that, sir? You think that you want to take some time and go talk to Charles and David, see what they have to say? Well, okay. I'll wait on this article. But it's been so nice to speak with you. Excuse me? Oh, sure thing. Sure. I'll tell him that you called. I'll say hello to him for you when I get back to the office. Thank you for calling. Oh my gosh. I think I just corrupted Batman.
Hey, we are Sunday Assembly Madison. There's coffee and cookies and things to centralize.
I gave that song a whack. What? I gave it a whack.
George Harrison, rise again.